What I want to do first today is refer to something we learned before and refer to a shiur I heard yesterday. Remember we talked about the judges in your day. In other words, right, the pasuk says that when you have a halachic dispute, go to the judges in your day. And we mentioned the fact that Rav Henkin's grandson testified that he who was the Rosh Yeshiva's Rosh Yeshiva was always in his day. He could relate to everybody. He knew what was going on, and he knew how to communicate, whether you were 80 or whether you were 5 years old. He just had that uncanny ability. And he says that's what the Torah wanted in the best of judges. I was listening to Rabbi Aaron Rakefet, who Baruch Hashem started his 65th year of giving shiurim. He's on YU Torah online, and on Sundays he does a shiur on shilas and tshuvas that are asked. And he goes back into maybe the 60s with this tshuva. And the tshuva was asked to Rav Menashe Klein. Rav Menashe Klein was a Hasidic posek, I believe in Brooklyn, but who took shaylas from everyone. He was a major posek. He may have been the one that actually set up the, quote, controversial Brooklyn era. I'm not sure of that, but I have an idea that it may him. You know, he dealt with everyone. So the shaila was asked to him that somebody comes to learn whose native language is English, and they want to start to learn Gemara. And as Rabbi Rakefet said, that's often the case with people who we call them Baal Tshuva, right? Baal Tshuvas or Chozrei B'Tshuva, that's what they want to learn. And the question is, what should the language of instruction be? And Rav Menashe Klein writes back, it's got to be Yiddish. And Rabbi Rakefet says he believes that probably the Torah was given in Yiddish, tongue-in-cheek. But because he learned it that way, being an American boy, but he learned Yiddish way back when. So he says, I'm going to contrast that with my Rebbe, Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, and what was his approach. And he says, I'm reminded of the story that a Rav told me that in the probably 60s, he called him over when this Rav was a student in his class in the Smicha program. And he said to him, Danny, teach me about baseball. And he said, what? He said, I want to know how the game of baseball operates. And he said, Rebbe, why would you need to know about baseball? And he said, it's very simple. He says, my grandchildren are coming for Shabbos to be with me, and I've got to have something that I can talk to them about on their level so they'll realize that I understand it. And if I say other things, I'm not an old fuddy-duddy, in effect. And he said, that's the approach of many of the contemporary poskim, that you don't fight against the native language that someone has. You teach them in their language. If you can be lucky enough to teach someone Hebrew so that they can look at the sources on their own, that's good too. But for the initial instruction, go to the actual language they know. And then he quotes a very famous Chazal in the Gemara. It says that before Moshe Rabbeinu left the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him every generation to be born until Moshiach and their Torah leaders. And, right, at one stage Moshe Rabbeinu asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why are you putting crowns on top of the letters of the Sefer Torah? We know certain letters have crowns. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, because Rabbi Akiva will one day darshan the crowns. And Moshe said, I'm not capable of doing that. And Moshe Rabbeinu was being shown the generations, and he saw Rabbi Akiva's generation. And he's taking, I guess, notice of Rabbi Akiva's learning with his students, and Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't understand a word. And Moshe Rabbeinu feels terrible. He says, how can this be? This is a Torah leader, generations down, and I don't understand? And then he hears one of the students ask Rabbi Akiva the question. And he says, Rebbe, this whole shiur that you've given, wonderful, but what's the basis of it? And he said, it's Halacha Mimoshe Sinai. This was one of the things that Moshe Rabbeinu received on high from the Rabbonah Shalom. And Moshe was happy. And so why was he happy? He says he juxtaposed this with the mitzvah of shofros. We know that we were given the mitzvah to create trumpets, chatzotros. The mitzvah of chatzotros. A Jewish leader has to have chatzotros to call the crowd. He has his trumpet, and there's different signals. One blast maybe means the Beistin, two blasts means the Beistin and the Kohanim, and enough, maybe three blasts means everybody. But that's what they did. And we're told that when Moshe Rabbeinu was Nifter, they had to bury his chatzotros. His chatzotros could not be used by Yehoshua, and Yehoshua's chatzotros couldn't be used by anyone else. And the halacha is that these trumpets exist for one leader and one leader only, and then they're buried. And the question is why? And Rabbi Rakef had said it's the same answer. The way Moshe Rabbeinu addressed the generation, Yehoshua could not step into his shoes and automatically just copy, just take up Moshe Rabbeinu's way of talking and way of reaction. Yehoshua had to develop his own leadership style based on the people in his generation. And as Rabbi Kef had said, that's the message to everyone, that Torah is forever. Torah was made to exist in every generation because Torah is the blueprint of creation. And Torah leaders have got to be able to listen to their generation, have to listen to relate to it, and give a message that's available and is able to be accepted by the people in their generations. Okay. I want to look at some of the halachos regarding the establishment of Rosh Chodesh. We talked last week somewhat about why we have 2 days, Rosh Hashanah, both in the diaspora and in Eretz Yisrael. And we mentioned that it's because of the need for witnesses to come and say they saw the months. And since Rosh Hashanah is the only yontov that falls out on the first of a month, and that's when people would come, we needed to have a buffer. We're told that once based in, would decide that a certain yontiv, that a certain day, either the 30th of Elul or the next day was Rosh Hashanah, they would send out messengers who would go into the country and into Bavel, right? And they would tell them about the fact of when Rosh Hashanah was. Now, it was important for Rosh Hashanah because we know the 10th day of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah and the 15th is Sukkot. So that was critical. We're told they sent out messengers also when Rosh Chodesh Nisan came, because people had to know when to bring the Korban Pesach, and also when it was a Daraisa, a Torah commandment, that you couldn't eat chametz. They also did it for the months of Elul, the months before Rosh Hashanah, because most years, the 30th day of Elul was actually considered Rosh Hashanah, and we call it the first day of Tishrei. So because that was the case in most years, they let people know, because there was no way to let them know on the same day when Rosh Chodesh Tishrei was. We're told as well that in the days of the Bayis Sheni, the second Bayis, when Hanukkah was a yontiv, they sent people then. And also in the days of the Bayis Sheni, Purim, they announced. We know that Purim... Excuse me. We know that Purim is the... occurred in the 70 years of Golus, before Hanukkah, and that's why it was Noyeg in the, right, they did it in the second Beis HaMikdash, and as a matter of fact, it says that even Kohanim had to leave the Avoda in order to be able to hear the Megillah. We're told that initially, for 2 months in the year, they gave the witnesses who saw the new moon the leeway to travel by horse. Today will be by car or whatever. Be machalal yontiv to tell based in what day was actually the new month. One was Tishrei, because of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, right? And Nisan, because we have the mitzvah deraisa of the Korban Pesach and of the eating matzah and the Isser of Chametz. So those two were important. So it says, this occurred even after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and there was still a semblance of Beis Din who could inform people as to when the day of the Rosh Chodesh Nisan or Rosh Chodesh Tishrei would occur. But it says we should know that when we depended totally on the Adim to testify the new months so that we could bring the proper Karbonos in the Beis HaMikdash, they were allowed to travel, right, and Mechalel Yontif for or Shabbos anytime. And we're given some technical details. It says, even if the two witnesses who view the new moon see it clearly high up in the sky, meaning that it's likely others have seen it as well, they're still required, if it's Friday night, to take off, to take their horse, to take food if they need it. If they have to fend off vagabonds, take along weapons, etc., but go. Right? Rav Yossi said no. He said if it's highly visible, we'll assume somebody came, but that's not the halacha. We're given a story in the Mishnayos that one time there were more than 40 different sets of witnesses coming to testify, and they were going through a place called Lud on Shabbos, where Rabbi Akiva lived, and Rabbi Akiva stopped them. He said, no, we don't need you all. Ravan Gamliel, who was a Nasi, he was the president of the Beis Din, sent Rabbi Akiva a message, and he said, you were wrong. We don't do this. Because if we dissuade somebody once from coming, if we say, no, you're not needed, the next time this happens and they see the new moon, they will assume that, okay, they're going to be stopped along the way anyway, and therefore, they won't come. So we let as many witnesses who want to come, come. And not only that, when those witnesses come, even though we only need two of them to give actual testimony, we still ask the others questions about it. And again, we want them to feel sufficiently important that no Jew will feel, oh, I don't have to go to Beis Din in Yerushalayim to tell them the new moon started now. We're told that the mitzvah of giving the testimony is considered a regular type of edus, similar to someone testifying that someone was Machalo Shabbos, in that the two witnesses cannot be related, and they have to be obviously checked. But they're dealing with the notion of relationship, because Rav Shimon says that if you look at the mitzvah of being Mekadesh, the month, it said, Vayidabar Hashem al Moshe v'al Aaron le'mor, HaChodesh Hazeh Rosh Chadashim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the mitzvah to sanctify the new moon to Moshe and Aaron together. Moshe and Aaron were brothers, and so he wants to learn out that brothers would be bona fide witnesses to give testimony together about the new moon. But the Chachamim say, no, that's a lovely drush, but you got to understand, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave that mitzvah to Moshe and Aaron, he gave it to them as the leaders of the Sanhedrin. In other words, God was saying, Moshe, you and Aaron have to convene the Beis Din to have Kiddush HaChodesh occur. And I'm not telling you you can be witnesses, but you've got to make sure the procedure exists. And then they tell a story that there was someone called Tuvia the doctor, who his son, and he had an Eved Kanani who he freed. When an Eved Kanani is freed, he becomes a Jew. And it says that when they came, the Kohanim thought that an Eved can't give testimony, so we'll ask the father and the son. However, when they came to Beis Din said no. They said the Kohanim assumed that someone who has to give witnesses has to have yichus. You can't be a slave, a freed slave, and that's not true. So they said the father and the slave are the appropriate witnesses in this case. And the son cannot give testimony. The Mishnah then gives certain people who aren't allowed to give this testimony. They're not trusted. It says gamblers aren't trusted because they feel there will cheat. People who do work with Shemitah produce can't be allowed to give this testimony. Excuse me. People who lend or borrow on interest, and the Torah, it's not allowed. We know that today we have a notion of a heter iska, which turns the loan into a business transaction, and therefore it can be done. Okay, I'm going to stop here.